we're scheduled a commission meeting for the evening. Roll call, please.
Chair Shelver.
Here.
Vice Chair Warren.
Here.
Commissioner Bowie. Commissioner Diaz.
Here.
Commissioner Hansen.
Here.
Commissioner Jones.
Here.
Commissioner Galbraith. Chair, we have quorum.
Thank you. If you please all rise for the pledge. And Pam, you get the lead tonight.
All right. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time, we're going to go ahead and take public communication. Have we had anybody?
Yes, sir. We have one request to speak, Chris Murphy.
Okay, great.
That's 2 minutes, yeah.
No, it's 3.
It's around this one. Sorry, 3 minutes. Can you start over?
Yeah.
Must have a lot of speakers.
You're correct. Sorry.
Thank you. My name is Chris Murphy. I'm here to speak on the Class 1 pedal assist and mountain bike issue. As you know, the commission voted 4-0 in the main meeting to authorize the staff to begin requesting a feasibility study for and a possible change to the regulations in the parks. I'm just following up to find out the status of the project, understand there's lots of different things going on. Also to let you know that myself and a colleague will be talking with Vice Chair Foley next Thursday, and if there are any resources that are needed for this project, for the staff, for the commission, or any questions that the commission has in order to make the recommendation, there's a ton of information on the record. I'm available anytime to come in and talk to the staff, to talk to any of you commissioners. I'd be happy to present our ideas about how to keep moving this forward. Also be talking to natural resources, the NCC, the Natural Communities Coalition, Darren Lowry there, to work with them and the landowners. I'm just trying to figure out how I can keep this process going, and I'd be interested in, if it's possible, to get a status update. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address the commission at this time on any matter in our jurisdiction? Okay, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing, bring it back for our consent calendar. We can move these actions in one item. At this time, is there any additions or deletion to the minutes? Any questions, anything, staff? Okay, have we received any written requests from the public?
No.
Is there a motion to accept?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? That passes. All right, we're moving on to our discussion calendar at this time. Is there anyone that would like to address the commission on item number 5A?
We have one request to speak on item 5A. That is from Jim Foley.
Okay, Mr. Foley, would you like the presentation before you speak, or would you like to speak now?
No, I can speak.
Go right ahead.
Jim Foley from the Orange County Mountain Bike and Facebook Media Group. I want to address kind of a little subset of the presentation on the unauthorized trails. This is more general. We have quite a bit of unauthorized trails. They've been around for decades and decades, and they are, for better or worse, ridden and used, and they're not maintained in any decent way. I would like to suggest and offer that some of these trails, we start a program of starting to bring some of these trails into some type of at least basic water management. Not to groom them, not to make them funner, not to make them better, not to bring them up to legal compliance, but just to simply address water management, because at least we can do that. They don't get any worse. They don't do any more environmental damage on that. That would have some safety solutions for people that simply ride them and don't get hurt on them, so at least we're not making bigger ruts. But again, just basic water management to start to bring these into some type of not as awful as they are, to at least minimize the environmental damage and maybe stop that from going forward. Thank you.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else who would like to address item 5A? Okay. At this time, we're going to get a presentation, I believe, on, from OC Park Trails this time.
Thank you, Chair.
Yahoo.
Tonight we have Antonio Valdez, our Trails and Mapping Administrator, and Ed Mina, one of our Parks Division Managers, who are presenting this item. And we're going to be starting with Antonio.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Antonio Valdez, OC Parks Trails and Mapping Administrator, and I will be presenting OC Parks Trails, Balancing Recreation and Conservation. So we'll begin the presentation by looking at the history and development of OC Parks Trails, and then we'll move on to unauthorized trails and their impacts. And then I'll hand it off to Ed Mena, Parks Division Manager, who will walk us through a recent unauthorized trail response. OC Parks Trail System History and Development. OC Parks manages roughly 500 miles of trails across the county. About 200 of these are regional trails. So these are the trails that connect parks, communities, and destinations throughout the county. The remaining 300 miles are natural surface trails located within our parklands, primarily concentrated in the 9 parks here on this slide. Now, most of these trail-dense parks were deeded to the county between the 1960s and the 1990s, and many of them came with pre-existing networks of ranch roads and informal user-created routes. OC Parks then incorporated many of these routes into its official system, forming the foundation of the trail networks that we have today. And then, shortly after acquisition, additional trails were sometimes constructed to enhance visitor access and improve connectivity. Decisions about which trails are included in a park's official system are guided by master plans, which include general development plans, or GDPs, and resource management plans, or RMPs. These are comprehensive, long-term documents that define park infrastructure, habitat management, and recreation access. They establish the official trail network by identifying which pre-existing routes are adopted, proposing new alignments, and in some cases, recommending trails for decommissioning. Shown on the right is the GDP of Peters Canyon Regional Park, along with a trail map from the document outlining the designated network. It's important to note that these plans are developed collaboratively, incorporating public input, stakeholder feedback, and regulatory agency review. Once finalized, master plans are then formally approved by the Board of Supervisors and set the long-term vision for park use and management. One of the main considerations when evaluating new infrastructure, such as trail additions, is the set of conservation plans and easements that OC Parks is obligated to uphold. So as many of you know, most OC Parks land is protected under a range of conservation plans and easements, including Orange County Parks Foundation easements, or OCPF, the Nature Conservancy easements, or TNC, the Central and Coastal Orange County Natural Community Conservation Plan / Habitat Conservation Plan, or NCCP / HCP, and the Southern Subregion Habitat Conservation Plan, or SSHCP. These plans serve as long-term permit agreements between the county and regulatory agencies. These agreements are allowed for the development of major infrastructure, including landfills, roadways, and flood control systems. In exchange for managing designated lands in accordance with those agreements, managing the designated lands in accordance with those agreements.
Question?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I think this is good to pause here for just a moment.
Absolutely.
I think this is important to people that have an interest in our trail system, biking, whatever type of horseback riding and trails. If you look at this list, this is just a small fraction of agencies that we have to coordinate whenever we make a decision. And I think it's important that the general public understand that even though it's brought before our commission, it's brought before the Trails Commission, we also have to run everything we do by the different government agencies, federal agencies, local, state, and even cities. I think also the environmental impacts, as you can see, habitat. So, you know, whenever we do something, it's not snap your fingers, we're going to do this. It's going to take a lot of time, it's going to take a lot of research, and we have to make sure that we follow the letter of the law. Thank you
very much, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay, so looking at the map, the solid green represents OC parks, and then the dots and the hatching represent the boundaries of conservation plans and easements. Each plan permits a limited amount of habitat disturbance. So for example, the NCCP/HCP, which is in the brown dots, allows for impact up to a defined threshold beyond which no further disturbance is permitted. On the other hand, the SSHCP, which is the orange hatching over here, allows no habitat impact at all. Because the SSHCP prohibits additional habitat disturbance, pre-existing trails that were not explicitly identified in a park's master plan are not permitted. Now that said, OC Parks does occasionally construct new trails. For example, in 2019, the RMP for Peters Canyon Regional Park was finalized with public input. It called for the creation of a new connector trail and two major reroutes, all of which have since been completed. In addition, the designation of three new wilderness areas in the Irvine Ranch open space has led to the development of over 17 miles of new trails just within the past 2 years. So now we'll look at unauthorized trails within our park lands, and we'll discuss some of the issues that they present. So unauthorized trails are the trails that are not formally recognized by OC Parks. Now, while providing high-quality recreation opportunities is a key priority, we must balance that with other critical considerations. So as mentioned earlier, the master plans define the park's trail networks, and OC Parks is obligated to honor the commitments laid out in the conservation plans and easements. But there are other reasons why incorporating unauthorized trails is generally inadvisable, and I'll cover those shortly. I'll turn your attention to the two images on the screen. So the image on the left shows the end of a bike jump. So it might be a little hard to interpret this image, so I'll guide you through it. You're seeing head-on a bike jump, and users descend from this point on the upper left and then launch from here. It took over 350 non-biodegradable sandbags to construct this jump. So that's an especially extreme example of unauthorized trail construction. So contrast that to the photo on the right. It shows that unauthorized trails can sometimes resemble official ones at a glance. So one clear indicator that you know that a trail is not authorized is that it does not have OC Parks signage at the trailhead. One major issue with unauthorized trails is they typically lack sustainable design. So they're often built on the most direct route down steep slopes. And this is problematic because during rain events, water concentrates along these paths and it flows straight down the trail, accelerating erosion and forming deep ruts. So then users tend to avoid these ruts by stepping or riding just off the side of the trail, trampling adjacent vegetation, which leads to the loss of those plants, exposed bare ground, and thus a wider trail. And then subsequent rains expand those ruts, again pushing users to the margins of the trail, resulting in yet more vegetation loss. So this is a feedback loop that causes trail expansion. And this phenomenon is taking place in the photo you see here. As you can see, this trail is much wider than a typical single track. Now, while a single instance of widening might seem like a minor habitat loss, the cumulative effect of widening occurring across multiple locations within a single trail, and then multiple trails within a park, can lead to thousands of square feet of habitat loss. In addition, OC Parks manages over 500 miles of authorized trails, a system that requires substantial ongoing maintenance. Adding steep, erosion-prone, unauthorized trails would only increase the strain on our maintenance resources. Now, I touched on one environmental impact on this last slide, but I'd like to expand on a few more here. So, to start with, the very act of building an unauthorized trail removes native plants, like the ones you see in this image here. So, that's already a direct impact from the outset. Furthermore, unauthorized trails act as vectors for invasive plant spread. They often outcompete native species, altering planting yields. Another significant issue is that unauthorized trails fragment large habitats into smaller, disconnected patches. So some wildlife species are highly sensitive to human presence and keep a set distance from trails, effectively creating a zone of avoidance. So the more trails that crisscross a park, the more avoidance zones overlap, leaving wildlife squeezed into increasingly smaller patches. So one affected species is the coast horned lizard right here. It's a California species of special concern, and fragmentation contributes to its population decline. And lastly, unauthorized trail maintenance rarely follows best practices. So builders often discard their cuttings onto live plants, smothering and potentially killing them, effectively doubling the trail's impact. And one final point that I have time to raise is the impact of unauthorized trails on paleontological and archaeological resources. Our parks contain numerous fossil deposits, like the shell impression that you see here. And then some of these fossils hold significant scientific value. The image in the center shows a fragment of fossil that was inadvertently cut through during unauthorized trail construction, demonstrating how easily irreplaceable resources can be damaged. OC Parks is also fortunate to steward a wide range of coastal resources across our wildlands. Many of our parklands contain areas with significant cultural artifacts that remain important to local indigenous communities, including the Tongva and the Anitachina. The image on the right shows excavation that goes up to 2.5 feet deep caused by unauthorized trail construction. So it's this type of activity that has the potential to seriously compromise the integrity of sensitive cultural sites and damage natural resources. And now I'll turn it over to Ed Bennett, Parks Division Manager, who will walk through a recent response of an unauthorized trail. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Sure.
At this point. So, if someone was on one of these trails and a ranger was there, the ranger would ask them to not be on the trail, right? And the gentleman that spoke earlier has offered to help work unauthorized trails. Did I get that right?
That's what I understood.
So he's asking to work on trails that we're not supposed to be on.
Correct.
Is their conversation about making some of these trails active?
Not at this time.
You know, one of the interesting things that was not in the presentation is we talked about all the negative things, right? But I think one of the most important things that we forgot to mention, or maybe I missed it, was how about the safety of the public and the safety of the people that use our trails? If you have an unauthorized trail, after all my experience of 70-some years in scouting, our greatest trouble that we had with scouts getting themselves in trouble and leaders that were really good at what they did was having unauthorized trails or trails we didn't know about or areas that were altered. So one of the things that we have to consider in our report is to make sure that we also take the side of the public. The people that use those trails, we need to make sure that they're safe and that they're, sometimes we have to let them know why. And I think if we do that, that is as strong as an argument that you can give. I know that the flora, the fauna, and the fossils are important, but I think human life is also very important too. Thank you. Go ahead, John.
When we talk about unauthorized trails, is this more intentionally created trails, or such as desire paths where effectively people just create their own path over time?
It depends. Yeah. So it can be both. I recommend that Ed finish this presentation, okay, and then we can continue this. But when you talk about unauthorized trails, some of them have been here for a while, and people are continuing to use them. But the trails that were designated through the different process, there was public input that was part of that. This wasn't a staff-led thing where it was only, oh, we're going to put it here, we're going to put it here. There was a lot of thought that went into it and a lot of public input. And you can see in the previous slide that a lot of our trails most of our parks and the trails were designated back in the 1990s. So this is a long time, but people continue to keep building new trails, and that's been part of the issue. And during COVID, we really had a hard time because people had a lot more free time on their hands and they wanted to be outside, and they were making a lot of new trails, which, as you're saying, safety-wise, if somebody gets hurt and our team is looking for someone, or fire personnel or the police department, whomever, right, is looking for them, and they say, oh, I'm in the middle of this park, there's thousands of acres in some of these parks, where are you, which trail are you on? I don't know, because there's no sign. So that's, I think, a really good point that you made, Dave, is that it's really about having that safety portion of it.
And on those same lines, I think, I don't know if you've thought of this, but you probably have, is a deter. It's very simple, that we just label these as an unauthorized trip.
So, I'm so glad that you said that. You would think that, I fed him that, I promise I didn't. We're going to get to the recommendation, but it's part of that, is really making sure that we're really being thoughtful about how we sign things and everything else, which then, I don't want to give it away. Let's have you go.
Let me follow up on one thing. When I talk about intentional versus unintentional, if you've been to a college campus, you'll always see that one patch of grass that is, heck, you can go straight through it because it's the easiest, quickest way to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's kind of unintentionally happening.
Correct. And when you're in a regional park, you see that a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Where, we're seeing this, and we can just add a trail, we can add a sidewalk.
Yeah.
There's a lot more things that we can do in our regional trails, in our regional parks. When you're talking about wilderness areas, we're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And in order for us to be able to add a trail in some of the parks, some of it's pretty simple, but once you get into the conservation easements, it's so complicated. And the area that Epson going to talk about right now is in the strictest conservation easement area. So that's a challenge. We can't just add trails.
Yeah.
Okay, good evening, commissioners. My name is Ed Mena, Parks Division Manager, and I oversee the majority of the wilderness facilities that OC Parks manages. Tonight, I will be giving you guys an update on the last park commission in regards to the recent trail closures in Casper's Wilderness Park, specifically adjacent to the Bellevue Regional Trail. We recognize this is a sensitive issue, and I want to provide some clarity on how we responded, what happened, and how we are moving forward. So I will bring up a map of Casper's Park. This is the main portion of the park, and we have some satellite parcels here and here. This will be the area that we will focus on tonight. But before I get started, I want to give you an overview of the park as a whole. Casper's Wilderness is one of the largest parks that OC Parks manages, and it encompasses over 8,000 acres of pristine open space, including 40 miles of trails. It is located in the southeastern portion of the county, and it is part of the Southern Subregion Habitat Conservation Plan, or the SSHCP. Its main entrance is off of the Ortega Highway, and it provides access to the campground, nature center, and park offices. Casper's includes satellite parcels, like I mentioned, and I will next go on to more of the focus zoomed in area for what I will be covering next. So this is the Robinson's Ranch community here, and the trail highlighted in gold is the Bellevue Regional Trail. It meanders all the way down through some easement areas that we have and eventually goes down into the park further down. The trails dotted in red are all of the unauthorized trails that have developed. So I want to next go over what happened. During regular inspections earlier this year, park staff noticed an increased amount of new unauthorized trails, specifically going towards a fire dozer suppression line. This line was created earlier, was created last fall as a result of a pretty large fire. These informal trails raise significant concerns related to public safety, impacts to sensitive habitats, and compliance with the SSHCP. As Antonio mentioned earlier, the SSHCP allows us to provide public access, but only on authorized trails. It also requires us to actively restore and prevent habitat impacts. Next, I want to go over what we did. So to prevent further damage and redirect users back onto the approved Bellevue Trail, staff implemented a trail closure plan in the general area. Before we implemented anything, staff reviewed the Caspers Park General Development Plan and confirmed no reference to future trails within that section of the park. What we did next is we contracted with the Orange County Conservation Corps, crews we've worked with in the past, on restoration and trail decommission projects. So next I will go over what type of work they did. So mainly they decompacted the trail tread and removed whatever trail features they found. For example, on the left, this barrel here was used as a jump. Here we have the crews actively working. And here is, once everything was done, we installed a sign, and I'll cover that sign in my presentation a little bit further. So finally, they covered the unauthorized paths with native brush material. Last, once all that was completed, park staff installed no trespassing signage at each entry point to discourage continued use. Following all of that, we heard from the public expressing their frustration how these trails were decommissioned and how the trails were communicated, the closures were communicated. How we responded and some of the next steps that we took. Staff, immediately after that meeting, I directed park staff to replace the no trespassing signs with habitat restoration in progress to better reflect our intent and conservation goal. So that's what you see here. So the original signs were replaced and we put habitat restoration in progress.
Yeah, I guess because if you put a close, it could still mean that there's a trail. It just happens to be closed. So maybe I'll come back later. That just kind of came to me right now. Versus if we're fixing this, it's almost could be keep off, right? Because we're fixing it.
That's something to consider, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should put a fine sign on.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was going to get a $500 ticket for walking on a no closed zone, I guess I'm going into a building that you say stay out of.
Yeah.
And so to me, if people have, there's no consequence.
Well, let's go to the next slide, and then I think this is a really good point.
It's recommended action.
Correct. Can you go to the recommended action, please?
Plant poison oak there.
Okay. Other things that park staff is actively working to restore target segments impacted by the fire suppression dozer line in the park. We are updating the OC Parks website with information on unauthorized trail impacts and overlaying conservation plans. And lastly, staff is finalizing work on trail decommissioning guidelines, which will be applied to future unauthorized trail closures in OC Parks. These guidelines will have a communication component, which includes providing notice, education, and context before and during closures. And in conclusion, OC Parks is taking thoughtful, proactive steps to restore areas impacted by unauthorized trail use, protect sensitive habitats, and meet our obligations under the SSHCP. In response to community concerns, we have adjusted our approach by improving signage and will expand public information through a new kiosk and website updates. Additionally, our staff has been working towards formalizing unauthorized trail decommissioning guidelines that will ensure trail closure methods and communication are outlined and consistent with our best practices. Lastly, these efforts reflect OC Park's broader commitment to balancing recreation and conservation. We remain dedicated to transparent communication, community engagement, and long-term stewardship of our parklands. So this leads us to our recommended action: refer the trail decommissioning guidelines to the OC Parks Trail Subcommittee for review and feedback. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
That's a great presentation by both of you guys, so thank you for that. I really appreciate how responsive park staff were to the very vocal folks who came to and being responsive obviously doesn't always mean giving people what they're asking for, but at least increasing our park communication and committing to doing a better job moving forward. So I'm really happy to see that. What can you share about, there's like the general development plans and then there's the resource management plans. What can you share about, like, are those updated ever? Are those ever reviewed? What would make sense from a kind of process perspective?
It depends on where they're at.
Okay.
So Jennifer is our expert here on all of it. So there are parks that we have, and I've talked about this at the beginning, or actually Tony talked about it at the beginning, that there are areas that we have a lot more flexibility than others. The area that we just talked about has like no flexibility. But other areas, we have actually made changes where we work with our regulatory agencies and the easement holders on those changes that make sense. So sometimes that might mean a trail reroute or closing a trail and opening another trail. Usually it ends up being like a one-for-one when we are able to do that. So am I saying this one well?
That's okay. So if a park is under an interim operations plan, like our open spaces, that is leading to a master plan eventually. Generally, the overall framework and infrastructure and a recreation element are defined in those plans. So those are the guideline moving forward and the framework. And as Pam was saying, depending on where that facility lies and what overlays might be in place there, there's opportunity to determine if a new trail connection might make sense or some of those things. Oftentimes they are contemplated, so they're actually outlined or at least sketched. It might not be that exact alignment, but conceptually that connection is often shown in there. As far as updating master plans, I don't think in my time we have, since we do have so many parks and it's such an extensive process to do that, but it doesn't mean that we're not able to do some adaptive management when we can and it makes sense.
Okay. So it's more on a case by case, something comes up and needs to be addressed rather than, you know, every 3 years, every RFP is required.
Correct. I don't think we could.
Yeah, there's too many.
Correct.
Thank you.
I'll just add, on the safety component, I've been in a situation where a call's been placed because somebody was missing on a trail, and yeah, the importance of marked trails is they're like streets. You know, if your car breaks down, you hope to be able to identify the dispatcher where you can be found, because otherwise you're going to be waiting for a while. And there is an importance to that, and yeah, and the preservation factor is obviously very important because it's borrowed land in many cases.
I think our greatest argument as an organization is public safety. I think probably the best way to do that is twofold. We could put up on the sign that this is a public safety concern if you use this trail. But we don't just leave it at that because, you know, then people are going to get inquisitive. I think that if we also put on there in a booklet or a pamphlet, and I know we can do this, if you have an unauthorized trail that people are using, we identify that as a trail that it could be a public safety or risk to them using it. But we also, nearby, we show an adjacent map that has a trail that's authorized that we encourage them to use that's going to get them to the same destination. That way we're not being so negative.
Yeah.
We're using it as what we all want, and that's everybody to be healthy and happy. But we're giving them an alternative for doing the right thing by using a trail that's already been established as one that is safer than to use.
Good points.
I like what we came up with earlier, that if those trails are around. So if it's an unauthorized trail, how quickly is it going to be worked on and restored?
It depends. Mm-hmm. And the reason it depends, it's a lot of times these trails will just naturally go back. And we prefer nature to take its course if possible.
That's how I met Liz. Yeah.
That's what she told me.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's a hazard. So one of the pictures that was shown here is that oil can drum.
Yeah.
Like that, obviously, that needs to be removed right away. It needs to be safe. The other extreme example was with all of those
sandbags
that's just, obviously, that's not okay.
Unbelievable.
We've also seen concrete poured. We've seen a lot of different things. So those are the ones that we have to act very quickly to close down.
It's like graffiti. You got to get it covered up really quickly.
But it's sometimes
they're coming back.
Correct. I think in 2020 was probably the worst whack-a-mole type of experience that we've had, because again, there was a lot of free time, and the increase that we had in all of our parks just went through the roof, just like a lot of other agencies. So we're still trying to catch up, I think, on some of those. And sometimes we don't even know there's a trail in there. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, where are you? And then someone is lost in there, and that's how we discover a trail. So I think it comes different ways. We also use drone imagery, and that's sometimes how we're finding trails. This is not new technology, but newer for us as far as how we're using it. And that's been very successful in us identifying some of these. But again, if it's already grown over, we let nature take care of it if we can.
So back to the signage that we were talking about, I think it does make sense that the signs that normally go up there are under restoration or what, because if you say this area is closed, you're giving credit that there was a trail. And we just take that out of people's mind. No, it was never a trail, you know, but it's now working on being fixed. And can you find somebody for being in an area?
Yes. Mike, what is that? Or Ev?
Yeah, we do have an ordinance.
Do you know what ordinance is?
Do you ever use it?
Yes.
Yeah, the park rangers use it.
Yeah,
I don't know it off the top of my head.
It's OCCO 2546, so I believe it.
I knew you would know.
I thought it was 547.
But okay, it's a $50 fine for the first offense.
Okay.
Obviously, we're progressive in enforcement.
I think this area is closed for restoration. If you go in here, 546 or whatever is going to come and get you. Yeah.
You know, our number one goal is always compliance and education. And a lot of times people just don't know. And as they're going through, it's like, oh, here's a beautiful trail, and they're using it, and they're not stopping and thinking about it. And so it's, hey, did you know this is? So it's really helping them understand.
This is
it.
A very proactive organization, Orange County Parks.
Yeah.
Very proactive and intentional.
Yes.
Very proactive, very intentional, and you play a great game. So keeping this under control. That's why I was confused when the gentleman spoke earlier and says he's willing to help with these, but we can't be on those, right?
But we always appreciate people volunteering to help us with our authorized trails.
Yeah. Okay.
And as we've heard before, IRC is fantastic, and they have a great volunteer program. And so they're a partner in that, and making sure that as we're working on our trails that we do it in the right way. Instead of that picture that you saw earlier of that deep ditch, all of those materials that were in that wheelbarrow, those were found. So that was an active area.
So the ask here is that we, can you put it in small words for me?
Yeah, basically what we're asking to do is our team has been working on a trail decommissioning guideline. So they're in draft form right now.
Yeah.
What we want to be able to do is bring that to the OC Parks Trail Subcommittee, have conversations like this, talking about the different areas, and then have them work on it, approve it, and it might take a couple meetings depending on if everything's perfect, great. Yeah. If it's not, that's
why
we're doing
this. Well, I
think
that you should do that.
And then we bring it back to the Parks Commission to so that you know what's happening. Do you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I make a motion that we do what you just said.
I can second.
Yeah, you bet.
Can I ask another clarifying question?
Yeah.
So what I'm aware of, actually, no trespassing signs is that you should be putting down a PC code on there so that it can be enforced. Is that similarly going to be necessary for a rehabilitation?
Can you go back?
Yeah, I can answer that question. So on all of our signage that is non-trespassing or whatever we do put the OCCO codes on there.
You
so
can't
if you look
see
at the,
it that
very,
great.
Very fine print, though.
It's there. So that OCCO code, because they're not allowed to go in any closed area.
Okay.
Anything off trail.
Well,
so that's a great question.
I just want to make sure the proper codes are on there. I've seen that come up way too often.
Yes.
You can't enforce it if it's not listed.
Now, I can't read that code from here, but yes, it's there.
Yeah.
All right. With the measure of the motion, add maybe a slight addendum to it that might suggest that besides what was requested by Dave and seconded, we also add that all the discussion that the commission's had tonight, some of the thoughts that we've had and ideas also be incorporated in the information that's going to the subcontrol subcommittee so that they'll have an idea of what our thoughts have been.
Hit the ground running.
Right.
Or you two are going to be there.
Yeah, but I think it's good that we have that.
We can give you the
they can have that in the agenda report before the meeting.
Yeah, we can do that.
And then one more quick question. So we have these trails that are bad, okay?
Yeah.
And we're trying to put them back, right?
Yeah.
How much government bureaucracy and how much does it cost trying to meet the needs of the requirements of state, federal, local government to put them back in the condition they're supposed to be in? Is that then prohibitive?
It depends. I would say there are some years it's not as bad as other years, as far as how much it costs
but
to put
people
them back
need
in.
To know that it's, when they do that.
When we spend money on decommissioning unauthorized trails, that's money that we can't spend somewhere else in our park system. All of our money stays within the park system. So if we're spending money decommissioning a trail because someone has built a new trail, like what we saw in the slides, some of them are easier and less expensive to decommission, but some of them are really expensive. To decommission a trail with all those sandbags and that very deep, I don't understand what they were doing, but that's what they did. That is expensive because then you're talking about engineering. So anytime you're really doing something that much, it's thousands of dollars. Taxpayer money.
I think that alone is justification for fines and forfeitures on those people that use that. Because if it costs us to put it back into its original condition with certain guidelines and requirements, then there's no reason why the people that maybe we catch doing it or people that use it should help participate in that only after we give them an opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to go the first time or the second time, but you know what? They keep going back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that means that they're ignoring what we're trying to do, and that puts, like you said, a financial deficit so that we can't really do the things we want to do in the future.
Yeah.
So with that amendment, are we okay with that? Okay, we have a first and a second. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to clarify, did the maker of the motion approve that amendment, though?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Okay. Second, or approves the friendly amendment?
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and our call for a roll call with the amendment to the motion.
Can you do me a favor, since Dave walked away for a second? Commissioner Hansen, can you reread the motion as you understand it?
So,
I want to make sure that he's approving the actual wording.
Okay. Motion, refer trail decommissioning and guidelines and share comments made by the Parks Commission, OC Parks Commissioners, with the trail OC Parks Trail Subcommittee for review and feedback.
Got it.
I have a motion, I have a second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody abstained? That passes?
Thank you.
Thank you, that was a great presentation. All right. We now get to talk about my favorite subject, trees. We're going to move on to our second item on the discussion calendar tonight, and that is our OC Parks Arboris presentation. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on item 5B? Okay, Mr. Arboris, you're up.
So this, you go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Good evening, everybody. My name is Kyle Sottle, and I am OC Parks Arborist. A little bit about myself. I am a board-certified master arborist through the International Society of Arboriculture, or ISA for short, and I'm also a tree risk assessment qualified through them. As a fun fact, there are fewer than 1,300 board-certified master arborists in the whole world, so I'm very honored to have that distinction. I earned my bachelor's degree in forestry and natural resources with a minor in Geographic Information Systems, or GIS, from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And I heard there's some fellow scouters, and I'm also an Eagle Scout.
Nice.
So, in my role, I oversee the health and safety of all the trees within OC Parks. I provide expert consultation for park projects, manage our tree maintenance contract, and yes, my favorite thing, I plant trees. So far we've inventoried 47,973 trees across the OC Park system, and that number continues to grow. So as you can see on the spreadsheet on the left, this is the top tree species that are found throughout all of OC Parks. And on the right is just the snapshot of our GIS system that we use, so you can see all 47,000 dots across the county. So back to my favorite topic is tree planting. In just the past 4 years, we've planted over 1,000 new trees across all of our parks. It is one of my top priorities. One of my top priorities is to increase the species diversity in our regional parks. A more diverse tree population is more resilient to pests, to better adapt to changing climate conditions. It enhances ecological health, and of course, it looks great too. So when it comes to our pruning, we follow ISA best management practices to make sure our trees stay healthy and structurally sound. Most trees in our regional parks are on a 3-year trimming cycle, which helps maintain the safety and aesthetic appeal. In our wilderness parks, we take a different approach. These trees are generally not pruned on a routine basis. That's intentional because we want to preserve their natural form and maintain the habitat value for wildlife. So I'm now going to talk to you about some of our tree pest challenges and partnerships that we have. So as you can see, we have four main pests that we're dealing with. We have the basic shovel borer, the gold spotted oak borer, the Asian citrus psyllid, and the ghost ganger. You can see the photos down the bottom, but unfortunately, I do not have a photo of ghost ganger because it's a ghost.
It's a ghost.
Exactly.
There's intention there.
Yeah. So
I guess the picture is there.
Oh, it is there. Yeah, it's over here on the right here. So all jokes aside, these pests pose a real threat to our tree canopy. So that's why we partner with the University of California Cooperative Extension, or UCCE, to develop and implement best management practice strategies monitor, manage, and mitigate these invasive pests.
There was a big run, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago, where one of the beetles was causing a big problem. Did that slow down? Did you show up in overtime and find these guys?
I've been with the parks a little over 5 years now. I showed up, and everyone was saying there's a lot of trees missing, specifically Laguna Niguel Regional Park. So that was thanks to this guy over here, the invasive shot of war. So right now we're taking management activities, which ranges from treating, but also the best case to, or the best way to manage this pest is to actually remove the heavily infested tree, because it makes the pest population just immediately crash. So it doesn't have time to spread out to other trees.
So while you're cutting the tree down, it's not like they're like, bail, and go to the other trees?
No, they're when we cut the trees down, they're still in the tree. So we chip, it's best management practice to chip the tree
and cut
it off. Yep. So it needs to be 3-inch minus, and it squishes all the bugs.
Oh, what?
It squishes all the
3-inch minus.
Oh, 3-inch minus, so when it goes through a wood chipper, all the chips are 3 inches or less. So you have a big tree, and it goes through the chipper, and it comes out like mulch.
So the best way to get rid of the infested tree is to just cut the tree. To get rid of the bug is to cut the tree down, boom, right then and there, chip it, kill the bugs.
Yep. And then go back to my favorite part, plant trees.
Plant a new one. Maybe a different type.
Exactly, because we don't want to plant the same tree over and over again, because guess what, we're just feeding, we're like, ooh, more sycamores that we can munch on. So that's why we diversify our parks and tree species. So, that, thanks for taking the time, thanks for the invite, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have about trees or tree care or anything tree related.
The trees that I see you planting in the pictures, they're tiny.
Yep.
You're talking before someone could throw a blanket under there and sip some iced tea, you're talking 20, 30 plus years.
So what's actually funny is it's best management practice to plant 15 gallons to 24 inch boxes. So that's, we typically are planting smaller trees because they have time to adapt to its surrounding. It's not gonna be as much shock. So, and the trees that I pick, they're gonna be fast growing. So they're gonna grow quicker than 15 years. So I planted 3 years ago at Laguna Niguel Regional Park. Go take a look at those trees on how full they are now. And you can absolutely put a blanket underneath. And that's kind of comes down to the right tree, right place, right, you know, everything that makes trees flourish. Like, I planted trees 8 months ago, they're already taller than me. So, and they started off shorter than me.
And you're not running new water to them, or that. So it's just whatever water the area, and you chose the trees that can adapt to that type of watering as well, right?
Yep.
So you need your house.
Oh, I'm here.
Is there any particular species you're really concerned about? I know it was the sycamores that were most vulnerable.
Yeah, so sycamores are the most vulnerable to shot of war. And so with that particular pest, you'll actually, if you go to a park and you actually come across a sycamore, it looks like somebody took a shotgun and hit the tree with all the pellet dots everywhere. And the tree looks like it's crying. So that's like, for whatever reason, shot of war loves that type of tree. Another pest is our gold spotted oak borer, and as the name suggests, it attacks all of our oak trees. So we're constantly trying to battle, figure it out, you know, what we can do to kind of prevent the spread.
So those two species are species here.
Yeah, and so that's why it's important to increase the diversity. So that way it's like, ooh, look, there's different trees, we don't like them, and they all go away. Hopefully.
That's the plan.
Yep. Yep.
Are these park staff that are showing up with the chipper and cutting, or do you hire tree people to show up?
So we do have a tree contractor that handles all the maintenance of the trees, but they are directed by me. So if I say don't cut that tree down, they're not going to go out.
And it's not staff that you have and all the maintenance of all the rigs and the chipper. Stuff and the guy hurts himself in the chair.
Yep.
You don't have any of that.
Nope, none of that stuff.
Okay.
3-inch chipping.
Is it WCA?
Yes, it is. West Coast Arbor.
I appreciate it. So, do you use satellite? Satellite for your identification?
So not yet, other than just the aerial photographs that we use for kind of mapping purposes.
The satellite system that we use in Stanton is identified by satellite every tree that we have in our city, and we're able to routinely do a maintenance on trimming, maintenance, upkeep, fertilization, etc.
We have that. So you want to explain what we have with our mapping?
So that's using the technology of LiDAR now, which is kind of, it's old technology, but new technology for the tree business. So you can essentially fly a drone over it, shooting off rays down, and it actually maps out the canopy of the trees.
Can you go back to that map?
Is that LiDAR?
So, Arbor Access.
So this is Arbor Access, which just puts a dot on the page that allows me to, see where the tree's location. It doesn't map the, what the tree looks like. That answers your question.
River Trail has a lot of trees.
Can you also talk about the number of trees that we have in our wilderness parks?
Are these only regional parks?
No, so this is 47,000 trees is park-wide, including wilderness parks and regional parks. So I would say, putting me on the spot, for our wilderness parks, I think there's going to be around 20, at least half of the trees are in our wilderness, parks.
What's your annual cost, WCA?
So our annual cost, we have a not-to-exceed contract amount of $3 million. It's broken down into different categories where we spend approximately $1.5 million to regular tree maintenance. So that's the three-year pruning cycle. So we essentially prune a third of our turf park trees a year.
For $1.5 million,
yes. So the other $500,000 to maybe a little bit more goes to dealing with our pest problem. So whether that's, treatments, different types of treatments we do, different types of removals, it's kind of the open work order system. So it's like, oh, this tree's overhanging, we can go take care of that. It's the little budget in there. And then the rest is going to be towards tree planting and kind of any special projects that come out, or especially, for instance, the Miles Square Expansion Project, we'll be planting trees there. So,
yep. Is that a public document?
Yes.
Can I get a copy of it?
A copy of this?
Okay, agreement.
Oh, yeah, that's all of them.
Where's tree number one?
I was asked that question. It started here in our office. That's tree number one, and it just kind of spiraled out.
That's pretty good.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah, a couple more questions, just quickly. The trees right in front of the Old Orange County Courthouse, are those also managed by OC Parks?
No.
Which ones are referring to? Those are referred, and those are managed by within the county facility?
They are managed by the facilities.
City of Santa Ana, the Civic Center Authority. So it's depends. Uh-huh. It's either one of those cities.
Got it. Okay. And then in terms of the distribution of like the plus 1,000 parks that were just recently like installed over the past 4 years, you said half of those at least are to regional parks, I'm assuming like Irvine Regional Park and the Miles Square Park and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. For me, that's like anything Miles Square Park, at least for District 2, that's the closest thing for us.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. I stress that go take a walk and look for state trees. You'll see them starting to pop up, and when my work is done, is you won't be able to see from the street inside of the park. So you'll come in and you won't be able to see the houses, the streets, you'll be in the park.
Yeah, awesome.
So with looking at this map here, the Santa Ana River Trail has a lot of trees.
Yep.
And where's the delineation between like the County Public Works being responsible for looking at that versus OC Parks?
So with this particular inventory, these are all of our jurisdiction trees. I'm constantly updating our inventory system. So if, let's just say, City of Anaheim takes over some trees, they're removed out of our inventory, and if we gain trees, we put more in there.
The line is, it's super complicated.
We
rely on our GPS system greatly, because it'll be, oh, this is Little Paca Park, this is OC Parks, but over here is flood control land, that's not ours. So our trails people really know
extremely well of what's in our jurisdiction, what's not. Mm-hmm. And then our operations staff, so this would be our trails team, our parks teams, they are working constantly with Kyle on, hey, this tree doesn't look right, or I don't know, you might want to come see this. And then Kyle goes out there and he goes, oh yes, here's the issue, or you know what, that's fine, that's how they look right now. So it's he's been really valuable, like invaluable, I should say, mm-hmm. To our parks team.
And to that same extent, how do you differentiate from county stock of trees, like an unincorporated territory or area, from OC Parks?
Well, it has to be on OC Parks property in order, okay. And we have property in unincorporated as well as in cities.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we
have no boundaries.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out.
We have a very detailed mapping tools that we can look in real time anywhere on our phone exactly where property boundaries are, what parks are parcels in real time. So you can be standing on a parcel and you'll know if you're on a park parcel or not.
Cool.
Yeah. So and our staff in the field use those tools to delineate lines and jurisdictions. Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, at this time, I did have an opportunity to go with the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to address the commission on this particular item, 5?
I just had a quick question.
Come on.
For the
If you want to speak under the public comments, you can come up here and do the whole thing again.
No, I don't. I just want to have a question.
It's not question and answer. You can do a public comment.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm wondering for myself whether the trees in the wildlife areas are groomed in the same way that the federal parks are groomed. I can answer later, I guess.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll have that back to you. You have a card, right? Our arborist will give you his card and he'll be more than happy to give you that information. Okay, anyone else? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing, bring it back. This is receive and file. Is there a motion to receive and file?
So moved.
Okay, all in favor? I got that one. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? That passes. Moving on.
And then right.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Thank you.
The two in the middle. All right, we're now moving on to our next item, which is number 5B, and that is our Orange Park Commission's proposed meeting schedule for the rest of the year.
No. This is the OC Parks Trail Subcommittee meeting update.
Oh, update.
Correct.
Sorry about that.
We have Jennifer Nagley, who you already heard tonight. She's our National Resources and Trails Manager, and she's going to give this update.
Hello, Commissioners. So the Trails Subcommittee meeting for the third quarter was held on July 10th and included two discussion items on the agenda. The first was a staff overview of the OC Parks Volunteer Program, which specifically highlighted the Trail Ambassador volunteer role and also went through the process to become an OC Parks volunteer. For the second item, staff provided an update on the Santa Ana River Trail Connection Project. And for both items, we didn't receive any public comment, and both were received and filed. The next meeting is scheduled for October 9th. And that concludes it. I'm pleased to answer any questions you might have.
One of the things I brought up, which the Trails Commission was very interested in, was a little bit of information on the OC Parks Foundation. And so I'm not sure if any of you folks really have the information on the OC Parks Foundation. I think that would be good for us to update this commission, as well as our subcommittee, so that you can might become more involved or have a better understanding of how that works and what benefit it is to OC Parks. Yeah. So maybe, Pam, if you could, I know we're going to do that for the Trail Subcommittee. Mm-hmm. I think for this group of people, commissioners, I think it would be good for them also. If you're okay with that, yeah? Okay, yes. Good. And you did a great job.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I think it's time to go to the chief, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, chief, go ahead.
Sorry, can I, since that's a receive and file item, is it going to be received and filed, or do we want to do a motion and second on that?
We did. We received and filed. Oh, you may have
on item C.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, not necessarily, no, but I just want to clarify if we were going to take a vote.
Yeah, you don't really have to, but we'll just go ahead and do it just for the sake of it. This is for the item on the report we just received. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody abstained? Okay, that passes. 5-0.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So I just wanted to give you a couple of updates. So you may have noticed when you first came in that there was a lot of parking available at the Katie Wheeler Library. That was officially closed from the Orange County Public Library system as of June 30th. The city of Irvine, as I think we've talked about before, has withdrawn from the county system. But the Katie Wheeler Library right now is in a flux state. So what that means is that the Orange County Public Library is actually using that building to be able to withdraw from the whole Irvine system. So they have books over here and other things in here to be able to then move those books and other things throughout the entire system. So that will be distributed. Then on July, they will be out by December 31st until January 1st, I said July 1st. January 1st, the city of Irvine will take possession of it. They're leasing it from OC Parks. We own that building. And we will then, they will have some time, obviously, to be able to first set up and be able to then turn that into an open library for the city of Irvine system. They recently opened two of their libraries in the city that are not on Parks property. So then this one will be their third library that they will have in the system. So just want to make sure you guys knew that.
Are the treasures still ours?
Are the treasures? What treasures?
Well, in a lot of our county library system, we have.
Oh.
Yes, I want to make sure that we keep our eye on those.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Julie Coleman is the county librarian, and she is amazing and very fastidious as well as her team, so you have no worries on that. The other thing is I wanted to give you an update on our Park Ranger Academy 11 recruitment. So we all met the Ranger 10 Academy. This is the next academy. So we had over 900 applicants. It is amazing. Then there was an assessment that they all had to do. Out of that 900, 507 were invited to interview. 486 scheduled interviews, so sometimes people apply and then they get other jobs in between. The interviews were held between July 14th and July 25th. They were all held here. We had them over 2 weeks every day, and we had 5 panels going on all at once. It was amazing to see this, so imagine this. From there, I don't have the exact number, but it's about 115, I believe, were invited to go into background checks. And this will be, they are considered peace officers, so they have to have a very rigorous background check, which takes, we're hoping 4 months, but it can take up to 6 months. And then from there, then we will determine who actually passes, and then we will then hire from that list. So it's exciting. We're moving forward. Any questions on that? It's exciting. I'm excited about this. Also wanted to just let you know that Laguna Gale Regional Park, which we talked about earlier about trees, in the lake we did have some fish that died. So this does sometimes happen naturally. We've been doing a ton of work looking into this of why did we have, we had about 500 to 600 fish that died. So we've been looking into this to find out, and what we are determining is that it sounds like it was a lack of oxygen. So we had warm weather, and then we had a cloud cover right afterwards. So the fish were confused, and this sometimes happens, where they were, when the warm water was there, they went to go to cooler water. So basically our lake goes into a creek, so they went into the creek, and then the cloud cover happened, so then the creek is shallower water. And so they thought it was nighttime, and they go further up, and there's no oxygen. So it's unfortunate that...
Didn't that water area have bubblers or something like that?
They do.
The area that was at, which generates more oxygen for the big area.
Yeah, it's really so I've learned more about fish in the past 2 weeks and lakes and management of it than I've learned in my life. And I've managed lakes before in my career, so... So we have aerators or bubblers. We did have some of them down for a couple of weeks. It's part of the whole ecosystem. They don't actually provide oxygen, but they do help with the flow of the lake. So it could have been a factor, but we don't, our experts, and I am not an expert, don't believe that was the reason that this happened, but it could have been. So this is all the fun parts of it, but we've been doing a ton of studying on this. And then we also have added OSTs, which are basically oxygen saturation something, but those also happen with the oxygen level, so it's extremely complex, but at the end of the day, sometimes this happens, and we're doing some things to try to figure out how to have it mitigated in the future, but none of this is fun. We don't want to see fish.
Does it have to do with vegetation?
I don't think so. It doesn't appear so.
There are plants that do produce...
Correct, but what it kind of is though, because there are a lot of reefs that are in that area, and when there is a cloud cover, they think that it's nighttime, and so then they emit bad things. So it's, again, it's very complicated. There is a page on our website all about it, so you can read and learn more than you maybe want to, but it's really good information, and we've all learned a lot about it, but I just want to make you guys aware of this.
How many did you lose?
About 500 to 600. Oh. Yeah. So it was larger than we've seen in recent years. That's why let's figure this out. Why is this happening? On to better news. Last night we had a courthouse exhibit. Thank you, Commissioner Diaz, for attending. So this was one of the exhibits that we've been doing at the courthouse, and it was amazing. There were these beautiful photographs. It was called The Other Side of Memory. There was one photograph that reminded me of my great-grandmother from Romania that was taken in Hungary in 1970, I believe. So it is an absolutely amazing exhibit. I highly recommend that you go and see it. The courthouse is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. till 4:30. So you can go see it yourself. It's going to be there until the end of this calendar year. So go see it. My last thing, next month's meeting is a field trip. It's going to be on September 12th at 9 a.m. at Carbon Canyon Park. So that's when we're going to go see the redwoods, which is really exciting. And I just wanted to see, does that speech still work for everybody? Yes, yes.
Was that Blondie that on July 31st?
Is what?
Blondie on July 31st.
That's not what we're talking about right now.
Well, the reason is I have 1,500 Blondie tour shirts that I was going to donate. Them. And I think I can give one to everybody in this room, and you'll treasure it forever.
I think they will treasure it forever.
How much walking is that day?
It can be as much or as little as you want to.
Yeah.
Partly, I have surgery on my foot on August 22nd, and then this is what, the 12th?
September 12th.
Later. So I'll still be on the crutches.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to get around in
you won't have to,
or whatever.
We can, we should be able to help with that. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a short ramp to the trees.
Yeah. And it's absolutely...
I'll still be able to move a little quicker than Dave.
And because I know you haven't gotten enough of Kyle,
I have a Jack's bike.
Oh my, who are you?
Yeah.
He is going to be at our field trip, and he is going to give us
the redwoods.
He's going to give us information on the redwoods, and honestly, I've been on this trail with Kyle. You're gonna love it.
All right.
You're gonna love it. Yes, and that's all I have to report.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to mention or say anything about item number 6? Okay, moving on to 7. These are commissioner comments and reports. I'm turning this over to you, so we'll start at the far end with the lady.
I'm
okay, next week, Dave?
No, thank you.
Next week.
Amazing presentations, thank you for all of them. Yes, please do visit the old Orange County Courthouse. It's an awesome exhibit. I think Luis Garza put it best in terms of it best describes the tumultuous times that we're living through right now and previous photos. So definitely check them out if you can. 8 a.m. to 4:30. And then, yeah, happy Chicano Heritage Month on Bava District 2. I know Vicente Sarmiento is very opponent about like, us mentioning that, and so I want to make sure that we put it here on the record as well for Rosa Parks.
Thank you, everybody, for your presentations. I had the opportunity to go out with Assembly Member Trita to get a tour of the Veterans Cemetery site and see kind of the relation between OC Parks and that. That location is quite complex itself. So look forward to seeing how that's all going to play out.
Okay, this is the first time in about 5 years that I'm not complaining about how cold this room is. So you guys did a good job today. Keep it up.
That was on the record.
It's supposed to be 100 and all. Anyway, thank you all, staff. Thank you for your presentations. Audience, thank you for your participation. And we'll be back.
Thank you.